Everybody, let your arms fall limp away from your body. And as you're able, tip your head back, and your chin way up, and grit your teeth and curl your lips back. And imagine that you are hanging by your teeth from a branch in the top of the Douglas fir tree out there. And somebody comes by and asks, "What is the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West?" Imagine how you respond. Okay, put your heads down. So this is case 5 in the Gateless Gate. The case is, the priest Xiangyun said, "It is as though you were up a tree, hanging from a branch with your teeth. Your hands and feet can't touch any branch. Someone appears beneath the tree and asks, 'What is the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West?' If you do not answer, you evade your responsibility. If you do answer, you lose your life. What do you do?" There's a tradition in Zen of starting a Dharma study by studying the title and spending a few days studying the title and then going on to the first sentence and spending some time studying that first sentence. And we don't do that so often with koans. With koans, a lot of times we jump right to the crux of it, the pivot point, where somebody becomes enlightened. But I do think in this case that it merits pause to look at those first two words where Xiangyun says, "It is as though." It's like. Well, what's like? I mean, your English teacher would have a fit if you started an essay like that, right? It's like. Life is like that. Zen practice is like that. Our suffering is like that. It's kind of all like that. All like being stuck there at the top of the branch. Now, the case may seem absurd, but we're living it every day. Every time we encounter, every time there is decision or dilemma, we're stuck there between staying safe or letting go. It's like, wake up, wake up. Death is at the door, live your life. In fact, my first reaction was, it is like that, except the person below doesn't just stand up and ask that. They scream it at you as they're running by. Quick, make a decision. You can't stay up there forever anyway. I'm looking over at the Han on the wall where we have the saying inscribed, I think it says, "Great is the matter of birth and death." Something like that on ours. The longer version that's often on the Han is, oh, maybe ours says, "Birth, death, great matter." I can't read it from here. Anyway, the longer version is, "Great is the matter of birth and death. Life is fleeting, gone, gone. Awake, awake, each one. Do not waste this precious life." Xiangyun finds himself up a tree without a paddle. What We often don't have the resources that we would hope to have. And yet, last week, Tim touched on the five remembrances, on the five truths. Here's a little different translation of those, saying very much the same thing. I am of the nature to grow old. There is no way to escape growing old. I am of the nature to have ill health. There is no way to escape having ill health. I am of the nature to die. There is no way to escape death. And we can't hang up there in the tree forever. Number four, all that is dear to me and everyone I love are of the nature to change. There is no way to escape being separated from them. My actions are my only true belongings. I cannot escape the consequences of my actions. My actions are the ground on which I stand. Which, of course, you're hanging from a tree. There is no ground from which you stand. But that's the case in which there's no action also. And then those remembrances can be repeated with, eventually, whoever is most dear to me is of the nature to grow old and die. And there's no way to escape. Zen isn't just about just sitting. Zen is about just sitting, but it's not just about just sitting. The priest who said this, Shangyun, something like that. The story of his awakening started with his meeting his teacher, Guishan. And Guishan asked him the koan of what was your face before your parents were born. And Shangyun said, he said, I have no idea. Please teach me. And Guishan said, it's not something I can teach you. For a number of reasons he said that. It's not something you can learn and understand. And besides, whatever understanding I have is mine, and that can't be yours. And so Shangyun was greatly disappointed and did one of those classic Zen, tear up all the texts and give up on formal study. And he went and took care of a cemetery, became a caretaker of a cemetery for a few decades. Until one day when he was sweeping the path, a piece of gravel hit a bamboo and tock, and he heard that tock and something clicked. In this koan of hanging up a tree and the koan of how Zen calls us to live our lives, maybe the koan that he had originally been given could have been restated a little and ask, show me your face before your parents were born. Engage with life. Show it and live it. Aiken, in responding to this koan, refers to an old Indian story that is just so good it's worth sharing. A man traveling across a field encountered a tiger. He fled, the tiger after him. Coming to a precipice, he caught hold of the root of a wild vine and swung himself down over the edge. The tiger sniffed at him from above. Trembling, the man looked down to where, far below, another tiger was waiting to eat him. Two mice, one white and one black, little by little began to gnaw away the vine. The man saw a luscious strawberry near him. Grasping the vine with one hand, he reached and plucked the strawberry with the other hand. How sweet it tasted. We're stuck between hanging with our teeth and falling to death. Very, very briefly is this life. Destiny like the flash of lightning, as Dogen says. And so there's just this little bit of time that we have to jump in and take it. Letting go of that branch is about letting go, about renunciation. Renunciation essentially is letting go of our attachments. We study a lot in Zen about how our attachments spoil whatever it is that we're attached to. When we pay attention, we can notice that we're clinging to something and we've really lost what originally held attraction for whatever it is that we're clinging to. And it took me a couple sentences to say that. Again, I turned to Dogen, who can do that in four words, when he says, in attachment, blossoms fall. In attachment, blossoms fall. If we're not willing to let go, we spoil it. A lot of times with Dogen, it's easier to take those small sips and just take four words at a time. In attachment, blossoms fall. Back to Guishan's enlightenment as to why, I'm sorry, of Xiangyan's enlightenment, why Guishan couldn't teach Xiangyan. Norman Fisher says, each of us is living out a different dilemma. And all of us are living dilemmas, like that dilemma of hanging from the branch. That ask us to just let go. An example for me is the terror of asking for things on the phone. Now, I don't know what the background is. I'm sure there was some, or maybe not, incident. But anyway, I kind of tend to get stuck in the preparatory phase of checking to make sure I have everything I need, rather than letting go. But really, the only escape is to let go into the jaws of terror. But how do we get there? Right? That is not easy. It's not, well, just let go. And that's what this Zen practice is about. That's why we can't just read a book about it and have full happiness forever. That it's little by little, starting out with noticing when things arise. And then, maybe eventually actually noticing what's arising. It's simple, but it's not easy. And eventually we can get there. With this practice that we do again and again, finding ourselves stuck on something and letting go, with the support of the teachings, support of our teachers, when we encounter them in face-to-face interviews, for example, and the support of the community, that we're all here together to support each other in our dilemmas. This koan is often studied in 12-step groups, Buddhist 12-step groups, looking at how to let go of addiction. Because in recognizing that all there is this moment, and the dilemma of this moment, the choice that we have to make in this moment. Did you hear about the Quebecois teenager who figured out Mayan city planning? This is recent news, just fairly recently. This 15-year-old Canadian was studying Mayan civilizations, and he's wondering, it's kind of weird that the Mayans built their cities in places where other civilizations wouldn't. Like, other ones seem to be smarter than that. They built their cities at the top of mountains and far away from rivers. But then he thought about how celestial mechanics seem to play such an important role in Mayan culture and Mayan life. And so he took a star map and overlaid it with a map of Mayan cities. And lo and behold, it actually lined up. But there was one major star on that map that didn't have a Mayan city associated with it. So we went to the Canadian Space Agency and said, check this out. And so the Canadian Space Agency, which has this relationship with scientists program, put him in the scientist program. And they helped him with detailed satellite images of the area where that Mayan city was supposed to be. And working together with the Canadian Space Agency, they found an unknown Mayan ruin. They believe, at this point, it's still satellite images. They're getting ready to mount an expedition to go.
It turns out it's a marijuana.
Turns out it's oh, are you?
Great story, though.
It's a great story, though.
So now we know what the Mayans were doing.
I leave it to Canada, right? Well, that is often what happens when we make our decisions. Right? We got to make a decision. We got to decide to go forth and be bold and make contacts and call up the Canadian Space Agency. And they got to decide or not. The only way that there's a chance of hope is to put the kid in the program. And then we screw up sometimes. And that's going to happen. But the alternative is just quietly slipping into death. The koans often come with commentary from the collector, in this case Wu Men was the collector of these koans, so we can't let this go without reading the official comment that goes with this, which oftentimes is read right after the case. But. So Wu Men said, "Even if your eloquence flows like a river, it is all in vain. Even if you can expound cogently upon the whole body of Buddhist literature, that too is useless. If you can respond to this dilemma properly, you give life to those who have been dead and kill those who have been alive. If you can't respond, you must wait and ask Maitreya about it." Maitreya being the future to come Buddha. And then Wu Men's verse, "Shengyun is just babbling nonsense. His poisonous intentions are limitless. He stops up the monks' mouths, making his whole body a demon eye." Poisonous. And a demon eye. References to death in Zen, of which we've had a few tonight, are about embracing that fine line between death as the realization of emptiness of a separate self, and death is the cessation of the body as we know it and the loss of everything that we hold dear. And they are coming. In the Buddha's teaching of two arrows, Buddha teaches that our suffering oftentimes is like we receive an arrow, something painful, emotionally excruciating or physically painful, and then because of our confusion, because of our delusion, we pile a whole lot more suffering on top of that. And so if we can learn to stop sticking ourselves with that second arrow, there'll be a lot less suffering. Jack Kornfield likens this to we're carrying a heavy bag, and we're just swaying under the weight of this heavy bag, and then realize that we're actually riding the bus now and we can put the bag down. So a lot of this suffering is because of our confusion, because of our delusion. And we're invited to examine what we think to be real. So maybe our situation in this koan is a product of delusion. Maybe we're not really stuck up in the top of a tree hanging by our teeth, but we're standing out in the lawn with a stick in our mouth. But we can't deny the existence of that first arrow, right? There is pain in life. There are bad things that happen. But we also can't deny that we really pile on top of that suffering. So maybe it's not quite as bad as we think it is. Maybe we actually can come down from the tree. And to the person who says, "What is the meaning of Bodhidharma's coming from the West?" We can free up our mouths and come down and say, "I don't know. But I've got some idea of what path to take. Let's walk together." Please respond.
Ah!
stick out of your mouth.
What do you want?
I'm waiting for you to throw the strawberries at us.
More?
Where are those strawberries?
It's all I've been doing the whole time is throwing strawberries.
Can I ask a question?
Please, ask a question.
The idea of renunciation has always bothered me. And it seems like with the Buddha, we make excuse. Well, there are different stories about his leaving his family, but somehow we always make excuses for him because he wasn't enlightened yet. But what about all those other monks in the thousands that left their families behind and came to join the Sangha? What happened to their families? So somehow the idea of renunciation always echoes with me with a sort of dropping off of responsibility.
Yeah, there seem to be skillful ways of renouncing and less skillful ways of renouncing. And certainly a history of, specifically in the type of renunciation you're talking about, renunciation of family. It seems to us like people are getting hurt.
I can't go off and run off and go to a monastery. I've got a special needs kid to take care of.
What is the breadth of possible renunciation?
I'm sorry, what?
The breadth of possible renunciation.
I don't understand the question.
So it would be probably causing suffering for you to run off to a monastery.
Yeah, I couldn't take him to his therapy band, which would be a really big deal for him.
Is there renunciation that could be in your life that would not be unskillful, that would not be causing suffering?
Perhaps you're renunciating your desire to go to a monastery.
Perhaps you are renunciating your desire to go to a monastery.
It's just something that's always struggled me a bit.
I think a lot of the they refer to a lot of the folks before they leave and go on this journey as householders. And just by virtue of the person leaving and renouncing the worldly possessions, it's considered a California divorce. The woman gets the house and all the possessions. So it might not be, you know, it might not be as bad as you think.
Oh, come on.
I would propose that the utility of the teachings is in how we can benefit from them in our attempt to be more compassionate. And so it's really, like with all of our forms, an effort to turn inward. And we're all working on ourselves. And it's an important question. I don't mean to say we shouldn't be asking, is this common Zen activity causing suffering? But we also might be able to gain something from the teaching, whether it's following the tradition as we find that to be appropriate for us, or looking at it and saying, this is what I can do with it. You know, I can renounce my addictions, for example. Renounce the things that I am attached to that are unskillful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Other thoughts? No more thoughts.